Why aren't we directing what it is that we do? And we don't have to do it all the time, but saying, you know what? I am living for, and I know one person that actually does this, I am living for praying that my children, our grandchildren, might live in what future historians will call the new Christendom. And it may be that Christendom in Europe, as you say, remains ascendant. We have history to say that it probably will. But it never really, the United States as we know it, certainly the lower 48, were never really part of a Christendom that was Catholic. It was mainly and principally Protestant. While north of us in Quebec and south of us in Mexico were Catholic. So what about the new Christendom?
Well, I think that we obviously have to trust our Lord, mm-hmm. and that he's the Lord of history. What we need to do is to ensure that we play our part in not just taking the baton from our ancestors, in other words, knowing our history, living our history, living our faith, but then to live faithfully in the time given us, however long that is, our 70 years or less or more, to carry that baton, if you are, or torch might be a better way of looking at it, carry that torch of faith to attract others to its light, and then hand that on to future generations. That's all we're called to do. We're not called to make sure that 200 years from now, yeah. The world's going to be a better place. We're called to that when we die, is the world a better place because we lived, or is it a worse place because we lived? Now, do we have a credit account, if you like, or have we caused more harm than good? And that's in other words, we have to be Christ-like in ourselves and bring the light of Christ to others. We don't have to worry too much about things that are beyond our control. In fact, you know, a rule I live by is try not to be anxious at all about anything of which I have no control. Because what's the point? Right? You're getting worried about something you can't do anything about, right? So I need to just worry about the things that I can change.
Well, I think that that's I think that's wise. But try doing that in circles where people, okay. So many people, though, today remain not imbued with that. Here, I'm gonna make a neologism, that Piercean wisdom.
I like that. You spread that.
It's a little piece of Piercean wisdom there that I can't fix this. You know, I think like you because I've talked to you several times about this and about how, you know, Mike, you really can't fix some of these things. And look, it's not to say that, you know, pride says that, oh, no, man, I can get in there. I can fix it. Well, you can't fix it. God might be able to fix it through you. But you, so put another way, well, whatever you send me to do, Lord, I'm here.
Right, and not succumbing to anxiety or anger, you know, because what happens when we allow ourselves to get angry or that we allow ourselves to get anxious is our own inner peace is lost. In other words, that we are exorcising God's grace from our being, and that basically destroys our ability to be the light of Christ to others. So if we find that something is making us angry, we have to pray, first of all, for peace in ourselves, and if necessary, walk away from the thing that angers us. Because if we can't control our anger, it's actually going to destroy us. The only human being that could actually have righteous anger and get away with it was Christ. The rest of us, if we allow anger to get the better of us, we basically become a force which is destructive.
And we all know people that have become destructive.
Yeah, I mean, and it's sad. I find it tragic when I see it amongst our brothers and sisters in the faith. That basically, they become animated primarily by an anger and a hatred of the enemy. Now, the enemy might be evil, but when you start hating, you become the enemy. Right? If you're animated by hatred and not love, you know, you may hate the people, and the people you hate may be evil, but you're becoming evil in hating them. And so that's something we have to be on the guard against. The devil's powerful, but God is more powerful. Right? We don't have to worry because the victory's already won. What we have to worry about is ensuring we're part of the victory.
And the other part of that is You have to have the humility, and this is something that we have to pray for and we have to work at, and you never stop. You know, Augustine says, if you stop working on humility, guess what? Pride just got you. No one ever achieves humility. You may be humble in a moment, but you haven't achieved humility. But, you know, like just as an example, if some people are so caught up and so angered by and frustrated by, and maybe even embarrassed by some of the things that the Holy Father does and says. Well, you know, and this can't continue. He's going to ruin this. This is going to be ruined. That's going to be ruined. Well, you know, based on what you said and some writing and history that backs up what you said and what you and I talked about here today, all I can do is pray about that. I can't do anything about it. Right. I'm certainly not going to do anything about it by worrying about it.
Exactly. And also, you know, that what faith? Where's our faith? You know, if again,
exactly.
I've written a book fairly recently. This should be published in a few months, I think, called Heroes of the Catholic Reformation, where I went back to the 16th century, the 1500s. And, you know, you've done a lot of research in this area, particularly in England. So you know about this. But, you know, there were some pretty awful popes
around
the church's history. You know, and again, I'm talking about proofs of the church being who she says she is, as the bride of Christ and God's mystical body, Christ's mystical body, is the fact that by all intents and purposes, with the leadership that the church has had throughout the centuries, you know, she should not be here. But you know, she's indestructible. Even when those at the top are doing their best to cause mayhem.